I saw that a pretty big concert is coming to Vegas's way, and you're thinking about going.
Bro, I was just in Vegas, as you know, we talked about it, and I was at the Sphere, and the whole weekend I was thinking, like, man, if a band that doesn't suck so far, U2 and Dead and Company, Grateful Dead, sort of tribute-ish. I guess there's still an original member in there, but anyway, the Grateful Dead. Those have been the two artists in residency, and there was no, there was no act booked to follow those. And I don't care for either of those groups. In fact, I actively hate U2. It's baffling to me that anybody likes U2. I really don't understand how U2 ever got popular. And in fact, when I went to see the Eagles for the first time in 2002, I remember reading the review of the concert in the Kansas City Star, and it said that the Eagles are not a mega rock band like The Who, great band, one of my favorites, probably my second favorite band ever, or tied for first, or U2. And I was like, what the fuck, U2? Did you just say that the Eagles aren't a mega rock band like U2? Well, suck it, Kansas City Star's concert review writer from 2002, because guess who's playing in the Sphere? 2 weeks before the Chiefs are in Las Vegas, the Eagles,
Go
and
birds.
seen that team, you sick Go Birds.
Gotcha.
Go Birds. I've seen that group 6 times. I love the Eagles. I saw them in Denver last year. It was a great show. I can't go to Vegas 3 times in 1 year, let alone Vegas twice in the span of 2 weeks, but I think I'm gonna have to do it. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor underscore Witt on Twitter. It is ring night. What is going on, buddy?
Yeah, just thinking about rings and jewelry and three-peating and all the awesomeness that comes with being a Kansas City Chiefs fan. It's a great night.
Boys looking fly, getting their rings. We will talk about that in the news. But first, we are brought to you by FanSided. And Taylor, you got a little bit of an update for our listeners.
Yeah, it was brought to our attention that these auto ads that we've been inserting into our episode when we joined on with FanSided, they had an option to kind of pick and choose which groups of ads and types of ads and stuff to be inserted into the show. And I didn't see that paperwork. And so we, for the last couple of weeks, have just been getting kind of some random ads, and we got some tweets, but being like, I mean, guys, we're still listening to the show, but like, what is going on with some of these ads? So I talked to FanSided, filled out a little form, got everything up to snuff. So I hope starting this week, anyone who's been a little thrown off by those kind of random sounding ads, maybe these will be a little bit better for you.
Yeah, just so we're clear, we do not endorse these products personally. We do benefit
we don't even know
financially
they're
from
what they
their
are.
Endorsement, right? And so, especially if they get really bad, like if we're out here taking money from like North Korea or something like that, Kim Jong-un is running ads on our program, please let us know, because we don't want to promote that kind of material. What we do want to promote is this podcast, which is going to be great. We have two items on the agenda. We've got news, news, news. It's ring night. We're going to talk about that. And we've got the Next Great American Dynasty, our ongoing off-season project where we are going through and recapping and re-exploring and just re-enjoying, frankly, every playoff game of the Patrick Mahomes era. Unfortunately, this week is going to be a little bit less fun because we are confronting the last playoff loss of the Patrick Mahomes era. Now, that last playoff loss was now 26 months ago. If my math is correct, or
No,
27 months
28.
ago. 28 months ago. 27.
Yeah, 28 by now. We're
or
in
28.
June, buddy.
Yeah, you're
So
right. No, you're right.
It's moving quick.
It is moving quick. Sometimes a little bit too fast, but the fact is the Chiefs have not lost a playoff game in 28 months, which is a good situation to be in. We are going to have to confront this. We're going to have to get through it, but bear with us. It will be fun. We will try and add a little bit of a sunny spin to this. But first, let's get into... It's ring night. Let's talk about the rings. I want to talk about the rings with you. We have to talk about the rings. Can we please talk about the rings? Please. 329 diamonds, 38 rubies. It's got Tom and Jerry in there. It's in the shape of Arrowhead. It's got four damn Lombardi trophies on there. It is awesome. And let me tell you, the Lombardi trophies, like every time, like I get intellectually that the Chiefs now have four Super Bowl trophies and four Super Bowl championships, and that they, in the last 2 years, have leapfrogged their division rivals, the Raiders and the Broncos, now have more championships than those teams do. That they put themselves in the top 10 all time for, franchise championships, all in the span of a couple of years. But man, seeing those four Lombardi trophies on this Super Bowl ring, it's got me going.
It's just what it's all about, really. So there's the winning the games and all that stuff is great, but it's only great because we get our Basque days, we get our off seasons and our bragging rights and all that stuff. That's really what it's all about. Like I get it, connecting with the players and watching them win and celebrating with your family and friends and loved ones and all that stuff. But for us, for the people that are really that know ball, that are into talking about sports and how much our team is better than your team. It's all about ring night. It's all about championships. It's all about count them rings. And this one, just like the last ones, is freaking amazing. I love that it's got back to back on there. I love just everything about it. I'm on top of the world right now.
I wish that they had found a way to pay tribute to the Queen of Kansas City, Taylor Swift, with this ring. And I have not seen any obvious homages to Taylor Swift, but I did see Taylor Swift watching the proceedings via Mecole Hardman's wife's Instagram live stream, What Is This World? And I am bringing to you exclusive on this podcast her comments on the stream. First, she commented three, hard eye emojis. Yes, in all caps with seven S's. Congratulations in all caps. Ah, in all caps. She writes, joining the party from Liverpool. Let's go with a little
Liverpool Knights.
British flag. She is obviously in the middle of the Eras tour. She is performing in the UK tonight, tomorrow. And she writes in all caps, and we get another year of McColl crown emoji. Then she took the all caps off and said, gotta go to sleep. It's so late here. Love you guys. Heart, heart, heart. I
Awesome.
mean, just an
Awesome.
incredibly surreal thing still for us to experience, even after all these months that we've been enjoying the world's foremost celebrity and entertainer being a fan of our team and dating one of our players. I mean, imagine being Mecole Hardman and Mecole Hardman's wife. And like, I mean, you're Mecole Hardman. Like, no offense to Mecole Hardman, but like, I mean, in the grand scheme of, I mean, as NFL players go, this guy could be pretty low on the list of, guys that you would expect to be, have Taylor Swift in his mentions, commenting on his every whereabouts. He has Taylor Swift celebrating another year of Mecole Hardman. Now, she doesn't care about the fact that he had like 15 yards in the regular season last year. She doesn't care about that. She knows that he's a stand-up guy and she loves his wife, and she's able to follow these proceedings from across the world on her Instagram app because his wife's out there live streaming the whole proceedings. What a time to be alive.
You know, it would be really cool to be so pure of heart and unjaded by sports that I mean, there's not a world where she's gonna be like, oh, that dude didn't help the team. He
Yeah,
sucks, or
right.
he's, I mean, there's just no, it doesn't exist. And so, I mean, I think we should all strive to be more of a sports fan like that, where you just support and, you know, do talk nothing but positive and great things about even people like Mecole Hardman that might frustrate us at times. We could all learn a thing or two about how to be a sports fan from her.
One last thing on the ring. It does have a Las Vegas inspired logo on the inside. We were just talking about Vegas. That obviously was the site of the Chiefs Super Bowl victory. But the ring has inside it Las Vegas inspired logo, a tribute to the host city. Literally, we got a Super Bowl ring with like the Raiders home city in it before they ever played a playoff game in the stadium that they have in that city. It is a wild, wild time to be a Chiefs fan.
Good to be
Travis
Kings.
Kelce, Mr. Taylor Swift, is enjoying the ride. He was asked about his plans to retire. Chris Jones riffed on this. He said Travis was, old as shit and He could understand it for a guy like Travis. He has no plans to retire either. Hasn't even thought about it. Travis says that he will play, quote, until the wheels fall off. He obviously signed a contract extension that gave him a little salary bump this year, but it's still great to see that. And obviously, what he says publicly doesn't mean a whole lot. He's always kind of been a man of his word, and I don't, think that he would deliberately mislead us, but you never know what the future holds. Still, it is nice to see that he is enjoying himself at the ripe old age, 35 years young he is this season, and he's back for back to back to back.
I really liked when a reporter asked him if he was worried about wear and tear, and he said, "Wear and tear me, baby." Like he's just all in on putting his body on the line and doing what it takes to go win the games. And I as much of a goofball as he is, and as much of a personality as he is that much of a warrior. He's that much of a tough competitor. And I mean, what an example that he sets for the younger players and even for the veterans to just, whether you've been around forever or it's your first year in the league, like he's going to show you how to work and how to compete and what it's all about. And we're so lucky and we'll continue to be lucky until those wheels fall off and he calls it a day because he's the GOAT.
Speaking of goats, we're still talking about Patrick Mahomes, but Tom Brady had his number retired by the Patriots. He went back to a ceremony. They got the stadium, dusted off in the middle of the summer to invite Tom Brady in to retire his number. Number 12 will no longer be used by the New England Patriots organization. Why are we talking about it on a Chiefs podcast in Chiefs land? Why are we talking about Tom Brady? Under the news, this isn't even a what is happening. This is under the news segment. I'll tell you why, Taylor. It's because Patrick Mahomes recorded a very classy congratulatory message for Tom Brady, which was played on the, Jumbotron at Foxborough to massive boos. I mean, the biggest boos of the night reserved for our quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. Louder, more sustained booing than Eli Manning, who quite literally defeated Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl. Went undefeated against him in the Super Bowl. Now, I got to ask, why do you suppose the New England Patriots fan base would direct such hatred and animosity towards a quarterback that Tom Brady beat in the Super Bowl? He's 1-0. He's 2-0 against Mahomes in the playoffs. He never lost to him in a playoff game. Oh, he never lost any kind of an important game to Patrick Mahomes. Why would the Patriots fans be? Why would they have so much vitriol towards Patrick Mahomes? What's going on here?
Well, normally I would say because they know ball and they understand what's happening. But like, I don't know if Patriots fans really know ball. I think they're just they're drunk on their own Boston farts and they just think that, oh, Mahomes, that's a cool guy, we gotta boo him. But if they knew ball, if it were instead of a stadium full of Patriots fans, if it were a stadium full of people that actually knew what they were doing, they would boo Patrick Mahomes because they would know that he's about to steal the GOAT crown before Tom Brady's really even done talking about football. Like Tom Brady's going to be an announcer announcing Patrick Mahomes winning his sixth and seventh and eighth and ninth Super Bowls. Like that's going to happen. And I know there are some people out there that are aware of that, but not the faithful in Foxborough.
I mean, literally, Tom Brady's calling a Super Bowl this year. Like,
Yeah.
if Mahomes wins the Super Bowl and three-peats, the conversation starts in the first Super Bowl that Tom Brady is calling as an announcer 2 years after he retired. I
Yeah,
mean, like,
especially if he goes 20-0.
I mean, the conversation at that point would frankly be over. I mean, like, if he has
Yes,
a perfect
correct.
season and then wins his third consecutive Super Bowl,
Correct.
ooh, Tom, that would be tough for you. Speaking of tough, we've got to confront this. It's time. It's the next great American dynasty. But to get to the next great American dynasty, you have to overcome adversity. You have to beat the odds. And the last playoff loss of the Patrick Mahomes era looms large tonight on ring night, the night that the Chiefs got their third Super Bowl ring in the Patrick Mahomes era, the fourth for the franchise. It's gonna suck. We gotta take our medicine. We gotta talk about the AFC Championship game loss to the Bengals. And listen, I just want to tell our listeners, that we are going to confront this thing head on, like men.
Well, let's just right off the bat just talk about how dog shit Skyline Chili is. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck the Bengals. Fuck Joe Burrow. Fuck Skyline Chili. Suck my dick, you fucking animals. I don't fucking care. Fuck you guys. That shit sucks dick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are about to embark on a journey through the annals of NFL history as we profile the often bumpy, occasionally tragic, perpetually underwhelming tale of the Cincinnati Bengals. That's right. We are not going to recap that game. We have been we've been dying to do this. The Bengals have been just as bad as the NFL's doormat teams. Their whole franchise history, the Browns, the Lions, the Jets, the Raiders, they've been so bad, but also so forgettable and irrelevant to the history of the league that I don't think many people even think of them when they think of the worst franchises in sports history. But not because they don't deserve it, just because people don't really think about them at all. But we're going to spend this episode, instead of doing the horrible thing that you thought we were going to do, we are going to reintroduce you, our listening audience, to the sad, pathetic, awful sports franchise that is the Cincinnati Bengals.
I love it. A surprise roast. We're getting back to our roots. We're going back to literally the first episode of this podcast. And you had no idea. I hope that they stayed with us long enough to get to, I mean, it's been like 15 minutes into the podcast. So, I mean, you know, hopefully they're still here. But my God, I can't wait. Let's do this.
So we're just going to kind of rapid fire. We're going to tell you about all the stuff about the Bengals that sucks because we are, it cracks us up and it makes us feel better. And so we're going to start with that the Bengals have the sixth most regular season losses since the 1970 merger at 451. Among the 26 teams that have been in the league since 1970, their 10 playoff wins are fourth fewest. They lose a bunch. They don't win playoff games. They have fewer playoff wins than Tampa Bay and Seattle. Tampa Bay had 12. Seattle has 17. Both of those teams entered the league 6 years later in 1976. And remarkably, they also have fewer playoff wins than their division rival Baltimore Ravens, who have amassed 17 playoff wins compared to the Bengals' 10 since entering the league in 1996, 26 years after 1970 merger. Unbelievable.
I mean, this is almost, that is unbelievable. Okay, let me acknowledge how unbelievable that is. That's insane. But they had five playoff wins before Joe Burrow, bro. Like, literally this team, five. Before Joe Burrow entered the league
years.
And Lou Anarumo carried him to five playoff wins. They had five playoff wins in 50-plus years. That's absolutely insane. When we were preparing for this, I just was looking at the history of the Bengals' playoff futility. And here's a little nugget that stuck out to me. I just was kind of scrolling through, looking at the scores of all these scores and scores of playoff games that they've lost. They have one playoff game in franchise history where they have scored 30 or more points. One time in 26 playoff games. They have scored more than 30 points. It was a 41-14 win over the Houston Oilers, who no longer exist, in 1991. Okay, so maybe you're thinking, well, you know, that's maybe not that weird. Like, there's a lot of teams in the NFL that aren't very good, that don't go to the playoffs very often, that simply, you know, there are other teams that could approach this record of futility, right? Ha, wrong. The team that's in second, the team that has two playoff games scoring 30-plus points, it's the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers have two, which is twice as many as the Bengals, except they've only been a team for a third of the time that the Bengals have been a team. They've only been a team since 1995, and the Bengals have been around since the merger. The Texans are next on this list. They have three playoff games of 30-plus points. They've only been a team since 2002, and they have tripled up the Bengals' 30-point playoff total. The next closest team of the Bengals that's been around as long as they have is the San Diego / Los Angeles Chargers, who have three. When you are pushing the Chargers for a mark of playoff utility, and in fact are three times as bad at them at something happening in the playoffs, that's just an unspeakably pathetic record. And this is an unspeakably pathetic franchise.
Wow. And you mentioned the year that they did the 30-point game,
Oh,
41-14.
1991. Sure.
It was 1991. So you would have thought, all right, maybe even though this team has sucked for the entirety of the NFL history up until 1991, maybe they're starting some positive momentum. Maybe they're really getting the franchise going in the right direction. Well, if you thought maybe you'd only have to wait a year for their next playoff win, add 30 to that. You would have to wait 31 years after that 30-point win to get their next playoff win. So they went 15 years after the 91 season without even getting to the playoffs. They went 15 years of playoff drought, which is rough. That is definitely not somewhere anyone wants to be. And then Marvin Lewis, who unbelievably had a 16-year run as Bengals head coach, including 0-7 in the playoffs. Of course, as you would imagine, that is the worst record by any head coach in playoff history. And so they strung together. They won their one game where they actually looked good in the playoffs and scored over 30, and then went 30 years after that without even a win.
It's unbelievable that, and we didn't even plan to get into this, but I got a riff on this. I mean, a head coach failing to win a playoff game and remaining employed for 16 years is an utterly astounding feat. I mean, like, we all know why they did it. It's because the Bengals are the cheapest franchise in the NFL. Their ownership is cheap. They literally have half the scouting staff and, front office people that normal NFL teams that are run by actual billionaires who have real money do. But keeping a head coach around for 16 years when he fails to win a playoff game, one single playoff game, seven tries, that is almost unfathomable. And the only reason you would ever do something like that is because you are paying that coach nothing and you're going to have to pay him money to not be your coach. You got to milk that contract for all it's worth. Sure, the guy can't win a playoff game, but it would cost money to hire somebody better, than Marvin Lewis. So, like, we don't really want to do that. Let's talk about the Bengals in the Super Bowl because everybody knows that the Bengals are 0-3 in the Super Bowl. They have zero Super Bowl rings. Again, no championships ever in the history of the franchise. But I want to dive into that a little bit deeper and I want to explore their futility in the big game. So let me just hit you with this off the top. Only teams with more Super Bowl appearances without winning a Super Bowl are, of course, the Vikings, who are 0-4, and the Bills, who are 0-4 with four consecutive Super Bowl losses. Now, the Vikings, we'll put them aside, the NFC team, but it is incredibly funny to me that two teams that would later form an alliance against the Kansas City Chiefs are combined 0-7 in the Super Bowl in their franchise history. And the Chiefs, of course, they're 3-1 in the Super Bowl over the last 5 years. Pretty good. And maybe if you're going to make an alliance, Bills fans, maybe don't ally with a franchise that has never won the Super Bowl, right? That's 0-3 in the Super Bowl in their history. Let me hit you with a couple of Super Bowl stats here, Taylor, because I did dive into each of these Super Bowl losses a little bit. They've lost each of their Super Bowls by one score. So 23-20 against the Rams, they had the ball last. They're driving. 2016 to the Niners in 1989. I'll get to that in a minute. 26-21 to the Niners in 1982. That's three Super Bowl losses all by one score. Is this the least clutch team of all time? Some people are saying.
Some people are saying, can't imagine losing even a single Super Bowl to the Niners, to be honest with you. But some people just don't have it.
Now, let's talk about those Super Bowl losses to the Niners because, of course, we wouldn't know what that looks like. But I'm going to
No.
paint a picture for you with words of what a Super Bowl loss to the Niners does look like. Now, listen, this was a beefy super team in the 80s, the 1980s 49ers, one of the great dynasties in NFL history. And people are saying, the late teens, early 20s Niners of this era are, a juggernaut, a superstar team. Fortunately for them, they ran into an actual dynasty, the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're 0-2 in the Super Bowl in their last couple of appearances. But let's circle back to 1982. The Bengals are down six with 6 minutes to go in this game. The defense can't hold. They give up a field goal. They're down 23-14. That is, of course, a 9-point deficit, and the 2-point conversion wouldn't make an appearance until 1994. That gives you even fewer options, but you've still got 6 minutes to go. You need to get a score on the ensuing drive to make this a game. Put a little pressure on there, put a little pressure on the board. Let's not forget the Chiefs themselves, of course, were down 2 scores with a little over, a little bit more time on the clock, but
Not much.
they pulled it off in 2019 against the 49ers. Could the Bengals do it in 1982? Of course not, because on the first play of the ensuing drive, Ken Anderson gets picked, trying to hit Chris Collinsworth, essentially ending the game. They would, however, go on to score a touchdown with 20 seconds left in this game in total garbage time to make this game look closer than it actually was. All right, so maybe this isn't the least clutch team of all time because, let's face it, they actually blew this game with like 6 minutes to go and not with, a minute
Yeah,
left to go. They
fair.
crumbled before you even got into true crunch time in this game. But in 1989, facing again Joe Montana and the San Francisco 49ers, the Bengals actually had a 3-point lead on this vaunted 49ers team with just 3 minutes and
Yeah.
44 seconds to go. Could they hold that magnificent 3-point lead? Of course they couldn't, because this is the most poverty franchise of all poverty franchises. The Cincinnati Bengals give up a 3-minute, 10-second TD drive to Joe Montana, ending in a touchdown grab by John Taylor. Did I say that there was 3 minutes of 44 seconds left on the clock? What do you not want to be doing? You don't want to be giving up a 3-minute, 10-second scoring drive to put you down 4 with 34 seconds to go. But listen, we've seen the Chiefs overcome longer odds in shorter amounts of time. We
Correct.
know Patrick Mahomes can do it, but could Boomer Esiason do it? Certainly not. 34 seconds left. Needed 4 points to tie the game. Tie the game. You can't score 4 points. You needed a touchdown to win this one. And Boomer Esiason completed a 5-yard pass. This is 1989, so I was not able to pull the footage from this game, but I can tell you when you have
Sure, it
34
was a
seconds left,
laser.
you should never be throwing a 5-yard
No.
pass. You should not be
No.
completing a 5-yard pass when you need a touchdown and you have 34 seconds left on the clock. I don't care what the game situation was. That is not a winning play. Then he took a sack, of course. Even worse, definitely not a winning play. And then went incompletion, incompletion, trying to hit Chris Collinsworth on both of those plays. The Bengals lose by 4 points to the Niners again. And then, of course, just a couple of years ago, let's not forget that after this game that we're not talking about, the Bengals had a chance to win their first Super Bowl, and they went on to face the, I was going to say the St. Louis Rams. Gosh, that's a blast from the past. The Los Angeles
Yeah.
Rams, of course, taking them on in the Super Bowl. And man, the Bengals had a chance to win this game. They had a chance to shut the Rams down, to stop them short of the end zone, to carry this one home with a win. But what happened? Eli Apple holding in the end zone, giving the Rams a second lease on life, letting them score the go-ahead touchdown, and then with a chance to drive down and end the game, we all know what happened. Aaron Donald happened. Joe Burrow went down, and the Bengals lose that game by 3 points. I don't want to get too deep into that game because I know you have some statistics on Joe Burrow, clutch playoff performer later on that I want to get into, but let's move on. What you got?
I do, and I'm very excited to talk about a lot of what we have planned today, including just the trio of statistical leaders on offense for the franchise. You mentioned Ken Anderson earlier for passing, Corey Dillon for rushing, and Chad Johnson for receiving. Guys, that is
Yikes.
rough. Like,
Oh my
I
gosh.
don't know how deep we would have to go to find a trio that's least qualified to lead a franchise in statistical categories as that trio, but that is really bad. But that's what happens when you're really bad. You have really bad stats and really bad everything. The Bengals have a 462 regular season win percentage, which actually ranks 23rd out of the 32 franchises. But I don't know about you, but in a sport where being bad is actually rewarded with high draft picks and with a chance to improve your team better, it actually feels like 23rd is like the worst possible spot you could be in. You're not
Yeah,
bad enough to change things.
definitely.
You're not bad enough to make a franchise altering draft selection most of the time. You're always so bad that your fans hate you, but you're never bad enough to matter. You never amount to anything. They're brutal, man.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I want to play a game called Patrick Mahomes versus Bengals franchise leaders. But first, I actually missed my last nugget on the Bengals in the Super Bowl. And I have to get to it because it's very good. Looking at point differential, so how many more points you score or fewer points you score than your opponents in the Super Bowl, the Bengals are at minus 12. They've only been outscored by 12 points in their three Super Bowl points chances. Sure. But of course, no wins, no rings.
No.
They are actually 17th out of the 28 teams that have played in a Super Bowl. They're actually 17th in point differential. So they're almost in the top half. There's only two teams above them in point differential that don't have a championship. And it's two teams with one appearance each, the Cardinals and the right. Titans, who played Makes one game. Sense. They lost by one score. Those are the only teams that have it. Teams that are below the Bengals that have a worse point differential in the Super Bowl than the Bengals include the Kansas City Chiefs, minus 14. Guess what that franchise has? Four Super Bowl rings, baby.
Four rings.
The Los Angeles Rams, minus 15 point differential. They've got two rings. The Philadelphia Eagles, minus 15 point differential. They've got a ring. The Miami Dolphins have a minus 29 point differential in the Super Bowl. Those guys have two Super Bowl rings. The Denver Broncos have a minus 112 Super Bowl point differential.
112.
Because every time the Broncos lose the Super Bowl, it is literally a historic blowout, like the worst blowout in the history of the Super Bowl. They just keep breaking their own record. Surprise Broncos roast in the middle of this. They have three Super Bowl rings, though, guys. They have a much worse point differential in the Super Bowl than the Cincinnati Bengals do. They have three Super Bowl rings, and the Cincinnati Bengals have zero. The New England Patriots have a minus 36 point differential in the Super Bowl, which is three times worse than the Bengals. They have infinity more Super Bowl rings because they have six, and the Bengals have zero. And that's how math works when you're dealing with multiplying a zero or something like that.
I have to remind you that the team that lost the Super Bowl by 30 or more points, or teams have done this five times ever, lost the Super Bowl by 30 or more. Three Denver Broncos teams, two other teams. So they have three of the five worst losses in Super Bowl history.
That's good. We can't let them get away with it. And, you know, two of those were John Elway. So, you know, suck it, John. It is what it is. Let's get back to my game because this is Patrick Mahomes versus Bengals franchise leaders. You mentioned the passing leader, Ken Anderson, and the rushing leader, Corey Dillon, and, of course, their receiving leader, Ocho Cinco-Johnson. The three brightest lights of the Bengals franchise at quarterback, because we're comparing quarterback to quarterback here, Ken Anderson, Boomer Esiason, Andy Dalton. Now, that's wildly unimpressive. And honestly, I mean, we talked about the three, you know, pillars, you know, quarterback, running back, wide receiver. Like, if we were to poll every franchise in the NFL, Bengals would be very close to the bottom in terms of the three players that they have leading each of those categories, like their best player at each of those positions. But quarterback, if you took the three best quarterbacks of every franchise in the NFL, I'm not sure that there would be very many teams that would have a worse top three quarterbacks in their franchise history than Ken Anderson, Andy Dalton, and Boomer Esiason. Maybe the Bears, who have never had a 4,000-yard passer ever. Maybe an expansion team, you know, maybe like the Texans, who it's like Deshaun Watson, I don't know, Deshaun Watson, CJ Stroud, David Carr. But, I mean, listen, Patrick Mahomes versus Ken Anderson, Andy Dalton, Boomer Esiason. He's played 96 games. So you have to bear in mind that Ken Anderson played 192, Andy Dalton played 133, and Boomer played 134. So we're looking at anywhere from like 35-ish more percent more games to, in Ken Anderson's case, literally double the number of games played for Ken Anderson. Let's start with passing yards because, as you mentioned, Ken Anderson, Bengals franchise passing yard leader. 32,838 passing yards for Ken Anderson. Patrick Mahomes, half as many games, 28,424 passing yards. So, I mean,
he's going to pass him this year.
He literally could pass him this year and probably will. All right, let's do touchdowns. Now, again, we've got these three, the three-headed joker from, I mean, it's like the three-headed dragon, but all the dragons are the stupid, goofy dragon that looks
That's
like he's got an
great.
IQ of about 45. That's the Bengals' top three quarterbacks, Ken, Andy, Boomer. Literally, okay, Boomer. Patrick Mahomes, touchdown passes, regular season only. If you put in the playoffs, obviously this number would get just absolutely stupidly one-sided in our favor. But it's already stupidly one-sided in our favor because Patrick Mahomes has 219 passing touchdowns in his career. Andy Dalton, who has played 37 more regular season games,
Oh
has
no.
15 fewer touchdowns.
Oh
37
no.
more games,
That's
15 fewer
embarrassing.
touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes 219, Andy Dalton 204. If you add in the playoffs, that number gets, as I said, even more one-sided. Yards per attempt. Now, this is a fun one because the Bengals' current yards per attempt leader is the current best quarterback on their roster, Jake Browning. With 8.0 yards per attempt, he is the Bengals' leader. And that is actually better than Patrick Mahomes, who's at 7.9. But if you want a quarterback who has played more than 9 games for the Bengals, their franchise leader is Boomer Esiason at 7.6, Mahomes 7.9, blowing them away. Quarterback rating, second best quarterback currently on the Bengals. It's Joe Burrow, he's the franchise leader. 98.6. That's fine. It's pretty good. Patrick Mahomes, 103.5. Just a cool little record setting, greatest of all time number there. And sack percentage, boy. Patrick Mahomes, elite sack avoider, 4% sack rate, extremely good. The Bengals sack percentage leader all time is Carson Palmer.
Carson
And
Palmer.
Carson
That's a name I
Palmer.
haven't heard in years.
In a long time, Carson Palmer retired to force his way out of Cincinnati, to force his way to the Oakland Raiders. All right. I just want to say that
It
about
was
Carson
rough.
Palmer and the state of the Cincinnati Bengals franchise. Literally, Carson Palmer, who, by the way, gave the Bengals some of the best years in their franchise's history, forced his way out by retiring from playing quarterback for the Bengals to force his way to the Oakland Raiders. Oakland Raiders of the early 2000s. That is how bad the Cincinnati Bengals are as a franchise. But in any case, Carson Palmer, 4.7% career sack rate. That is the best mark in Bengals franchise history. And Patrick Mahomes, 4%, pretty good, quite a bit better than the Bengals all-time situation there. And listen, let's compare it to Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's career sack rate. Oh, this
Ooh,
number is interesting. 7.2%
oh
sack
no.
rate. Is that good? Is that
Oh,
good?
Joe, I thought you were supposed to be cool, buddy. I thought you were supposed to be Joe Burr.
Yeah, Joe
But
Burrow. Joe buried under Chris
uh
Jones's paws because he just got sacked again. Oh, by the
Joe
way,
Burn.
Joe burned. By the way, Jake Browning, I mentioned he's the franchise leader in yards per attempt.
You
He's
did.
also pushing Joe Burr for the franchise passer rating record. Joe's at 98.6. Jake Browning's at 98.4. So better
Oh
watch out, buddy, because
man, he's coming.
Jake Browning, come.
Well, you mentioned a couple guys there, Carson Palmer and Joe Burrow, who both, of course, were drafted number one overall by the Bengals. That got me kind of thinking just about drafting and about how bad teams have a reputation of drafting poorly, right? They, you
Sure.
know,
Yeah, they're
for
bad.
example, the Lions, in their illustrious, long, storied NFL franchise of 0 Super Bowls and 0 Super Bowl appearances, have drafted 15 playoff, or sorry, 15 Hall of Fame players in their career or in their franchise history. And so I started looking at, like, okay, what about the Browns? The Browns have also been awful. They've been doorstep, just complete irrelevance forever. They've drafted 14 Hall of Famers in their whole franchise history. So I'm like, oh man, so that's like what the bad teams do. They, like,
Sure.
they can get 14 or 15 or so. Raiders, check the Raiders. They've been, they had their great stretch in the 70s, but they've been bad for a really, really, really long time. They're drafting idiots all over the place. They have 14 career drafted Hall of Famers. So 14, 15, I'm thinking, all right, the Bengals are probably at like 20, probably something embarrassing, right down in the dregs with these guys that you don't want to look at. I was off. I had the two part right of the guess, but that's it. They have drafted two
Two,
Hall of Famers. Two.
two.
Yes, two Hall of Famers. And let me show you why. Let me just give you some examples of why the Bengals have only drafted two Hall of Famers in their entire franchise history.
That's almost impossible.
It is actually almost impossible. We're going to start with Akili Smith, who they picked third overall in the 1999 draft. We've actually mentioned Akili on this show before because obviously we like to burn and make fun of people who do dumb stuff. And boy, was this a dumb one. Before the draft in 99, as we all remember, New Orleans head coach Mike Ditka offered the Bengals nine draft picks in the 99 and 2000 drafts, hoping to move up and pick Texas standout running back Ricky Williams. The Bengals had no desires to make this trade. They had won three games the year before, obviously, no surprise there. And they took a look at Akili Smith and they said, no, we don't want those nine draft picks. We want this guy. He played a single season as the Oregon starting quarterback, and then immediately after they picked him, held out of training camp in a contract dispute with the Bengals. So he started off on a great foot with them. He only started 17 games over the next 3 years. And for those keeping track at score at home, there are 16 games in a season. So out of 48, he started 17 games, went 3-14, completed under 50% of his passes at 46%, threw only five touchdowns over 3 years. Threw 13 interceptions, had a career passer rating that would make John Elway embarrassed for him, 52.8. I mean, that's his that's really bad. So that was Akili Smith. But of course, let's not forget Kajana Carter, a player that the Bengals took first overall in 1995 after he had a standout running back season the year before in Michigan. They traded their fifth overall and the 36th pick to move up from 5 to 1 and to go get him. He would end his Bengals tenure 5 years later with just one 100-yard game and 747 total rushing yards with the team. They picked him first overall.
A running back, first overall, and then it happened to be Chicani Carter and or Kajani, Chicani, Kajani, Jabroni,
Kajana.
more like it,
Kajana.
because he was a Jabroni. I can't believe that they drafted a running back first overall. I just want to, I mean, teams used to do this, right? But this has to be the worst first overall pick on running back ever. I mean, like,
Extremely bad.
there are several Pro Football Hall of Famers who were running backs who were drafted first overall. Bill Dudley, Charlie Trippi, Bill or Paul Hornung. You've got
Bo
O.J.
Jackson.
Simpson, classic. Earl Campbell, of course. Bo Jackson, not in the Hall of Fame, but a great player who was drafted number one overall. Billy Sims, not a Hall of Famer, but a very good player. There's literally just a couple of guys that were selected first overall and never made it to a Pro Bowl as a running
That's
back.
right.
In fact, there's only a handful of guys. And since the merger, since 1970, there have only been two running backs selected first overall that did not make a Pro Bowl. One was Ricky Bell, who was selected in 1977 by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who
One of the worst.
the previous year went 0-14, the first winless season in NFL history, with the worst point differential in NFL history. Shocking that that team made a poor choice with Ricky Bell the following year, and Kajana Carter. That's it. That's it.
I do have to say, I said he went to Michigan. I had the wrong Big Ten team. He went to Penn State, but same thing.
Michigan, Penn State,
Just a little correction there.
same dude, right? Speaking of same dudes, oh my God, who day, who dat? Okay, so there is indisputable historical evidence that the Saints chant, who dat, started in New Orleans, and specifically in the New Orleans sports scene, not necessarily with the Saints. But this was a phrase that had been in New Orleans in the parlance for decades in the jazz context, part of the city's whole, cultural hub. It was in the lexicon, right? And the Bengals didn't co-opt this phrase and change it into Houdet until the late 70s. So there's just no possible historical argument, no matter what a Bengals fan wants to tell you, that they originated this chant. It originated in New Orleans and they stole it. And what's crazy about this is neither the Saints, the team that they stole this chant from, nor the chant itself is any good at all.
No.
They're both just terrible. At the time, the Saints were one of the most moribund franchises in the NFL, and the Bengals were thinking, this is the energy that we want to bring into our stadium. And the chant itself is terrible. They are copying something that sucks. It's literally inexplicable.
Who they think gonna beat them Bengals? Oh, I don't know. How about at least one opponent every playoff appearance in Bengals history? I mean, who they think gonna beat them? Why don't you guys finish a year where no one beats you in the playoffs? And then you can talk about who do they think gonna beat us? Because right now it's freaking everybody every year. It's
Literally,
unbelievable.
literally everyone, even the team that originated that chant, that was literally one of the worst teams in NFL history. At least the Saints
Won a
finally got a
Super
Super
Bowl.
Bowl. Yeah,
That's right.
they at least can say that the chant worked once. Who
Yes,
dat gonna
who?
beat them Saints? One time it worked, and nobody beat the Saints. It's
That's
never
right.
worked for the Bengals. Maybe
It's
retire
never,
that one.
and it never will. That brings us to today, for the most part. Joe Burrow, drafted first overall, as we mentioned, after arguably the best season in college football or quarterback history, college football quarterback history. And in the 4 seasons since they picked him, he has managed to win. Let me count. I'm not sure I can count this high. 0 Super Bowls, 0 MVPs, got one token Pro Bowl nod in 2022, and has finished twice the year as being one of the most hurt players in the NFL. He's thrown as many fourth quarter playoff touchdown passes, one, as his defense has scored for him, one. So Joe Burrow in the fourth quarter or overtime of playoff games, when he's down 1 through 8 points, so a single possession game, he is gone. Punt, punt, field goal when he started on the 47 off of his defenses getting an interception, threw an interception, kicked a field goal. Congrats to him. Kicked another field goal, started at his 45 off of an interception. Stop me if you've heard that before.
Sure.
Turned it over on downs. Finally got off the schneid and scored a touchdown. Oh, wait, but he started on the Chiefs 45 after a fumble, threw an interception, punted the football, which means he has 10 career drives in the fourth quarter of overtime in playoff games when it's a one-score game. And he's scored one touchdown, kicked three field goals, threw two picks, and four punts. So
And
that.
three of the scores started in, I
And three of
mean,
the scores were gifts. I mean, he can't drive the whole field
a
when the
field
game's
goal
on the
drive where you
line.
started at your own 45 and your own
Right.
47, and a
Yes, that's
touchdown when you
basically
were
one
in
first down.
opponent territory. That's
Yes.
crazy.
Yes, it is. These are 50-yard drives at the most, and most of them are much shorter than that. Which brings me to your original point earlier about Super Bowl 56 specifically against the Rams. We had the most footage on that, and it was the freshest in our mind. So I just wanted to go back
Sure.
and kind of relive
Oh.
what happened in that game, because I remember the dramatic ending, and a lot of people talk about Joe Cool as being this, under pressure type of
I mean,
performer.
he just beaten Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game. Let's
He
not
had,
forget.
he had, and the Bengals had just broken their 31-year playoff drought this year, so everyone was feeling good about the Bengals. It was the fourth quarter. There were 12 minutes to go. The Bengals had managed to hold a 20-16 lead on the Rams, and they got the ball back. So a 4-point lead with 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, with one good drive, becomes an 11-point lead. Becomes almost insurmountable if you're not Patrick Mahomes to come back and win that game, right? So
Yeah.
all Joe Burrow would have to do is go win the Super Bowl. He's
Right.
got a shot. He's got 12 minutes to go. They first hand the ball off to Joe Mixon. This will become a pattern where Zach Taylor doesn't seem to want to trust Joe Burrow in these types of situations. Goes for 1 yard. So then Burrow drops back to pass. Nowhere close to the intended target. Incomplete pass. He was under some pressure. Surprise, surprise. Joe Burrow's always under pressure. And then took a sack on third down. So couldn't get it done that time. He's going to have to send the ball back to Matt Stafford and only have a 4-point lead and go on the sideline and just hope for the best. And so he punts it. But the Bengals defense gets him an instant three and out. They give him the ball right back and they say, all right, Joe, it's 3 minutes closer to the end. It's 9 minutes to go and you have a 4-point lead. Just go score a touchdown, buddy. Just go put this thing on ice, Joe Cool. And so after three Joe Mixon runs, straight runs. So Zach Taylor's like, listen, we can't trust this guy.
Game on the line.
Game
Yeah,
on the line.
I'm
Give it
taking
to
that out of his
Joe.
hands.
Give it to Joe, but not the quarterback, Joe. Give it to Joe Mixon. And so finally, Burrow drops back on first down after these mix and runs and says, dude, that guy's pretty good. Let me give it to him. Except it's a terrible read and they lose 3 yards on the throw. Burrow's under pressure, dumps it off to Mixon. He gets blown up. Terrible play. So that was first down. Second down, Zach Taylor's like, we got to go back to Mixon. We can't be giving it to Joe Burrow anymore. Hand the ball off to Mixon. He runs for 4 yards on second and 13. So now it's third and nine. Joe Burrow back. Play a Super Bowl on the line. Incomplete, short left, hits the feet of Tyler Boyd, didn't even come close, and they've got to punt it. And of course, you know, you give other good quarterbacks and good teams in the NFL several chances to win a game. Eventually, they're going to do it. And so the Rams, as you detailed with the Eli Apple hold, score with a minute 25 to go. Take a 23-20 lead, a three-point lead. That is chump change for legendary quarterbacks, for guys that right. are supposed to make their whole career in this.
I mean,
moment.
A 3-point lead, you're winning the game.
You're basically,
I mean, Patrick Mahomes gets that ball down three, it's the game's over.
Of course, the Rams should have thought, well, too bad. We only had a 3-point lead. We gave the ball back to a young superstar drafted first overall quarterback. We're cooked. We're Joe Burr. But Joe Burr, who needed a field goal to tie the game, immediately starts off with a 6-yard comebacker that Ja'Marr Chase had to reach way up, make a really good catch on, and then turn around and no Rams defenders were there, and he took it for 17 yards. So congrats to Joe Burr on the 17-yard pass there where he threw it 6 yards out of range. And then he drops back on first and 10 after that and throws this ball like – ridiculously bad, like way 50 yards. It was a miscommunication between he and Ja'Marr Chase. Really, really bad. Then Tyler Boyd goes for 9 yards, and now we're facing third and one. And Zach Taylor, once again, Super Bowl on the line, down three, third and one. He's going, God, what do I do? What do I do? I guess I could do a rollout. I could do a little sprint ride action with my superstar quarterback and give him a read or run option or do something. No, let me just hand the ball off to Samaje Perine. And not because Zach Taylor's not good at his job. I honestly think this is a great idea because we all know what's going to happen if you give Joe Burrow the ball. And Samaje Perine,
he's going to choke.
He's going to choke. And Samaje Perine gets blown up because they ran directly up the middle on the greatest defensive tackle that's ever played the game, Aaron Donald. And
let
he
me just
stuffs
say,
him.
Just before you get to this final play, uh-huh. I mean, listen, Zach Taylor is cooking with Jake Browning. He has the second highest quarterback rating
yes.
in the history
Correct.
Of the Bengals franchise and
Correct.
The highest yards per attempt in the Bengals franchise history. So,
yes,
I mean, the problem is not Zach Taylor, right?
No.
Like,
no,
he knows
he's
he knows,
working
he
with
knows
the
well.
Tools that he was given. And in this case, he was given
he
a quarterback that chokes under pressure. Yeah, he didn't have Jake Browning. He wished he had Jake Browning, and he actually made the correction and went and got Jake Browning after this because he was tired of giving this ball to Joe Burrow. So fourth and one, you know, it's got to happen. Game on the line. You lose this play, you lose the Super Bowl. Now, I've seen a player on fourth and one in the Super Bowl where if – you don't pick up the game or the play, you lose the Super Bowl. I've seen that happen before. Patrick Mahomes ran for a first down. In this case, Joe Burrow, game on the line, immediate pressure by the Rams defensive line. And instead of being able to escape that pressure or do anything productive or whatever, he basically gets spun three quarters around by Aaron Donald and throws the ball helplessly at Samaje Perine, but certainly not close to catching it.
Yeah,
loses. Loses the biggest game of his life after he had this reputation of being this cool customer, this guy that you trust in the big moments. He's great, actually, at taking a sack, which is something that he almost did in that final play. Since he was drafted in 2020, Joe Burrow is only the 10th in games played at quarterback, but he is all the way up at second in sacks taken. With 177 since 2020, and he's missed significant time with injuries. He trails only Russell Wilson's 185 sacks, and Russell Wilson can't even read a defense. Fuck the Bengals. Fuck Joe Burrow. Fuck Skyline Chili.